Welcome to QuakeCast, the podcast for id Software's classic Quake and the games it inspired.
Hello, Quakers, and welcome to another episode of the QuakeCast. Today, we have a great guest. It's Daz, who not only has a really large involvement with Quake and mapping for Quake, but he also has a really cool YouTube channel, maybe you've heard of it, called Custom Gamer.
He also has a top secret alter ego that I believe goes by the name of Dranzers, or
I thought it was a sidekick or something.
Well, I think there's some controversy, and we're going to have to clear that up.
Weren't there some other guys too? Dazzers?
Dranzers? Branzers? Dizzers? I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either.
We'll get to the bottom of it.
But Daz is also currently working at Splash Damage, who are working on a new Gears of War game, so we'll be getting into that.
But first, I wanted to talk about a little experience I had recently. I went to a retro gaming festival called the Retro City Festival, and I thought you might appreciate hearing a little bit about it.
Yeah, you shared some photos here online. I was checking them out, and I was thinking, man, this looks like such a cool festival to have been a part of.
It was really cool. What they had was, it was just kind of a small convention space with merchant tables where you could kind of buy, trade, sell, used old retro games. And I'm telling you, they had everything. And then they had a really great playable area that ringed the entire area, or part of the area, I'm sorry. And you could play things like a Famicom. I'd seen and read about Famicoms before, but you could play the Super Famicom, the original ColecoVision, I mean, Intellivision, Atari 2600, 5600, all those more common ones, but then a lot of really rare ones. So it was really cool. Then they had another section with arcade games and pinball machines. But I think one of the highlights was seeing their kind of museum area. So you could see these old Dolphin, you know, AKA GameCube dev kits and pretty much all the major dev kits like Xbox and PlayStation and stuff, and just all kinds of random really kind of arcane things from the industry. And one of the pictures I have in here is an Apple IIe, I think, or Apple IIe.
Yeah. Apple IIe. That was my first computer as a
wow,
kid.
Wow. That's crazy. Yeah. It was kind of cool to see, that they had Oregon Trail on there. And it's just funny that my kids sat down and played the original, you know, version from a floppy, and they're like, yeah, the light comes on over here when it loads. I'm like, yeah. Oh yeah. Floppies.
Yep. Remember that? And then you had to flip it over and do the thing. And
exactly. You know,
did your kid get dysentery, or how did he go?
He failed at hunting, so I think he starved to death, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, I had a stroll through memory lane playing like Marble Madness, and my kids played Tempest, and I went and played some, you know, just those stand-up ones I used to go blow all my money on when I was a kid. So it was really fun. So we'll post some links to some of these pictures. And if anybody gets a chance to, I don't know if it travels around, I'm assuming it does. If anybody gets a chance, they should definitely check out the show. It was cool.
And one of the other things I think is funny in your pictures too, is you sort of got pictures of everything that's like id Software or, you know, John Romero related,
yeah,
like used games.
I mean, and I really did take almost all the pictures I could. I mean, you could, some of, there's a lot of duplicates, but I was looking. But one interesting thing, and I will put these pictures up, but there was a Next Step computer. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe Doom and Quake were developed on Next Step. I have to go back and check that, but I know at least one of the two of those was developed, and I had never seen a Next Step computer, this is really geeky computer stuff. But it was after Jobs left Apple, or was forced out of Apple, he started Next. And I know that the id guys were big fans, and so they jumped in whole hog. And I remember the mouse there was just like, when we picked it up yesterday, my kids were like, oh my God, Phil, how heavy this mouse is. It was really funny. But I'm like, yeah, this thing was probably $50,000, this computer. I don't even know, back in the day. But black and white, you know, beautiful black and white monitor. And so it was kind of cool. It was really fun. Daikatana for N64 was selling for like $30.
$30?
I know. Are you kidding?
What are they thinking?
I know. Are you kidding me?
No, like, it must be really rare. I don't know.
Maybe, you know, it didn't. There's no autographs or anything.
That copy is dirty too. It's covered in stickers and permanent marker. And
oh, exactly. And it's from a Blockbuster or something. And it's like store number 0608.
$30. It's yours.
I bought a used Wavebird. Those are hard to find, by the way. So they were like 50, they're like, you know, really good condition, was like $40, $50. And There was this ganky one. It was really dirty and grimy, but the control sticks are fine. And it didn't have a receiver. And so I bought it for, I made an offer, you know, like it was like 30 and I'm like, you'll take 20 for it. And we had to haggle a little bit. So
That's the wireless GameCube controller, right?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So I have one, but I wanted a second one. So,
I have two myself. I have a gray one and I have the platinum one, I think.
Ooh.
So nice. I'm just like, yeah, just in case I want to play on two wireless controllers, you know?
Yeah. One in each hand, double, you know, akimbo style.
Right. Double dash style. There you go.
I will say one of the highlights was playing Donkey Kong on a ColecoVision. I know that doesn't sound like a highlight. I mean, it was painful, but it was kind of cool. It was like, oh, this game is so universal and you play it in so many systems. And it was a fun day.
Donkey Kong has been everywhere and they're still making Donkey Kong games today. Obviously much different than the original, but it's cool to see that, you know, you had this festival and kids can come in and see where, you know, Donkey Kong and all of his friends sort of started. I think that's a lot of fun. One of the other pictures you took here that I'm actually interested to ask you about is this Game Boy panel that you had here. It looks like you got
multiple,
like,
multiple colors.
Yeah, it looks like you got like a Mega Man Game Boy there and a R2-D2 one. And
yeah, let me
see. That was kind of cool.
Because we were kind of, it was a little crowded there, so I didn't really linger as long as I wanted to. But yeah, these guys sell mod, you know, kind of mod ingredients, or, you know, I don't know if they mod, but for you, but I'll have to look up the site. I think it's Game Boy Junk. Let's see, Game Boy Junkie.
Yeah, Game Boy Junkie. You've even got like three Game Boys out front here that have succulents growing out of them.
Yeah, I didn't think that wasn't a really good picture, but yeah, they took these Game Boy shells. I'm sure there's tons of them out there, but they took the guts out and put succulents. I was like, oh, that's kind of nice, actually. So that was really cool.
Really funny. Yeah.
But those are backlit OG Game Boys, which looked, I mean, the picture doesn't do it justice. They look so good. I wanted to literally just grab it and go. So they had just all kinds of different ways to mod your Game Boy. So pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, that's really cool. I know they've been doing a lot with the portable systems nowadays. They've been like, you know, in addition to the Game Boy, there's like the Game Boy Advance that didn't have a backlight. So there's a lot of modders now that are taking them and trying to add backlights to them. And they just look phenomenal. These included, these look really fun.
Yeah, I didn't take pictures of those, but they had those as well. And they, boy, because I remember when I first got an, now I'm spacing. Hello, Game Boy Advance. First Game Boy Advance didn't have any kind of front light or backlight or anything. And It was really irritating because it's like, come on, get with the program, people. You have to mod these things. But now, and I remember what they used to look like, and now they look so much better. You know, technology's gotten better. So that's almost, it really kind of makes you want to go back in time as opposed to some of the 3DS stuff. And because I've got a pretty decent connection or collect, I'm sorry, connection. I was looking at a connector. I've got a pretty decent collection of Game Boy games. And so I would just love to play like this, but I had to kind of restrain myself yesterday.
I never knew. I didn't know you were a big Game Boy guy.
I'm actually not, but the games I played, I love. So like 6 Golden Coins, I literally will bust that out every year at the, I don't know, in the fall or whatever. And I'll just go, I haven't played that in a while. I'm going to play that. And then I get really frustrated and put it back down. But here's a fun fact. I quit smoking when I found out my wife was pregnant with my oldest child. I had smoked for many years and I bought a Game Boy Pocket. And that's how I quit smoking. 6 Golden Coins helped me quit smoking because every time I wanted a cigarette, I'd go out like I would normally go out and take a break at work or whatever. And I would play 6 Golden Coins and it would distract me and it helped me.
Wow.
Quit smoking. Yeah.
That's pretty crazy? Amazing. Yeah. Put that in the back of the box. Help Dumb Trek quit smoking.
Exactly.
In addition to selling 10 million copies.
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
But I had one last question for you on this, though. You said you bought a bunch of stuff. You mentioned the Waybird. What is the prized thing that you got there?
So the highlight for me was one of the tables there. I had rows and rows of these books, and it was a company called Boss Fight Books, and they're publishers of really unique kind of behind the scenes look at video games. So they had Spelunky. I bought the Galaga one and the Super Mario Brothers 3 books. And so they're basically, you know, I probably read them in a day or so, but nice, good quality printing. And it's a documentary kind of style, heavy duty, deep dive into the behind the scenes of some of these games. So I highly recommend people go check it out. We'll put a link to their website in the notes. But that was a highlight for me because I love the story of the industry and kind of hearing new things about the old games we love.
Yeah, you'll have to let us know what you think of those books when you get around to them, because I've seen those books around for a little bit now, but I haven't actually had the chance to check any of them out. So you have to let us know.
Yeah, and the museum was really cool to see all the old systems. It was just kind of the presentation could have been better, but it was really cool to see all those old peripherals and dev kits and everything. So yeah,
very nice. And that was the Retro City Festival. All right, guys, on with the show.
So it must have been 1997, because I didn't have a PC until about 97. And I had only ever played Doom around my friend's house and only for like a couple of hours. So then he got Quake Shareware in 96, and I played that a few times. I was like, yeah, it's all right. You know, went back to playing my Sega Master System. Didn't think more about it. And then when I finally got my PC in 1996, I had I think it was a PC Zone demo CD, and it had Quake Shareware on it and Duke Nukem 3D demo and all that stuff. So I just installed all that. And then, God, when was it? I think it was another demo CD a bit later on. They had the editor on it, but I don't think it worked for the demo. So I went out and bought the full game, and it all kind of cascaded from there.
The rest is history.
Yeah.
And what a history.
I know, right?
I mean, we might as well air this as soon as possible, because I know a lot of people are listening who have come in recent years and as a direct result of your custom gamer channel. So and I'm one of them. I was about 2015, I think.
Wow.
Fire and Brimstone,
yeah,
was the first video I saw, and I saw what was being done with the maps. And you know, we'll get to your channel later, but all I can say is, like, I'm here because of your damn channel. So I'm glad you found that disc.
Yeah, it's funny. A few people have mentioned that to me over the years, and it's I guess that's kind of why I did that thing. I mean, there was a couple of reasons, but another one was just to, you know, promote what everyone in the Quake community is up to, because it felt very, very close knit, and like we all spoke to each other, but we never really spoke to the outside world, you know. So it's like all this quality and craftsmanship was kind of going a little bit unnoticed, or that's kind of how I felt. So that's one of the reasons why I started the channel. But anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves, I guess.
I have a tendency to do that.
That's okay. And I was gonna say, for those who don't know, the YouTube channel we're talking about, and I'm sure a lot of people who listen to this already know, but for any new people, Custom Gamer on YouTube was Daz's YouTube channel. Very helpful in talking about level design and Quake maps in general.
Yeah. And it took me ages to come up with the name, like literally minutes. One of those things you regret.
I always had a hard time finding it.
Yeah.
I always had a hard time finding it. Like, what is it? Game something?
Yeah. Oh, well, never mind.
Well, I apologize for getting off topic. Sorry. My boss is going to hurt me over here. Sorry.
Yeah.
So, yeah, talking about Quake, though, what led you to actually playing Quake, enjoying Quake, and then wanting to actually build levels in said game?
I think Quake was the first game I played where the graphics were good enough where I felt kind of transported into that place, right? Where everything that came before, I was like, okay, this is a video game. It looks kind of cool, but it's definitely a game, you know, whatever. And Quake was the first game with like all the sounds, the lighting and everything. It had that really grungy atmosphere, the music, and it just sucked me in. It was one of the first games that ever did that to me. So I guess it had a very strong impression, I guess, as I'm still playing it 23 years later.
Wow, yeah.
But yeah, it was the first game that ever really did that to me, so I never really looked back after that.
So you saw that, and you said, I want to create something gritty, and you just went for it?
Yeah, I'm trying to think what happened next. Like, I got the editor. I think I got BSP editor was the very first one I tried. And, you know, I made some box maps and, you know, thought this is really hard. Can I be bothered? And then I got Worldcraft or was it the Forge? I think I got Worldcraft and it was actually called Worldcraft. So, and then that editor was so much easier to use. And that's when I got really hooked. Yeah. So.
Well, and just this is a perfect time for me to talk. I try to play people's maps or go back and review, and I just couldn't get it together. My mother-in-law is in town, so I've got a great excuse. And also, I went out of town yesterday.
Yeah.
But I did. I have played your maps before in the packs, especially. So, mm-hmm. But I downloaded Daz SP1 this morning fired it up, and it's definitely. I had to kind of bring this up, but it has some very distinctive features. Let's see. I took some notes here.
Okay.
Very steep steps, right? Very steep steps.
Yeah.
Good use of ogres, though. Nice vertical use of mm-hmm. ogres. This was kind of fun. Gold key before the silver key.
Yeah,
that kind of threw me a little bit.
It depends which way you go, right?
You know, exactly. So it's a little non-linear. That's fine. That cheap trigger push at the ending. That was really awesome where you push into a shambler and a... No, but it was cool. I actually liked it. I thought it was funny. But the biggest problem I had with the entire map was I got both secrets, by the way, which never happens. The biggest problem I had was no intermission camera. So I think hopefully you learned your lesson.
I think people did rip out of me for that.
But no, it's fun. It's a fun level. No, and then as you went on and you see some of your work, it's really fantastic. So I'm just giving you a hard time. But yeah, beautiful work and just what a great body of work that you have.
Yeah, man, that was a long time ago. In fact, I think people seem to really enjoy Daz SP2. Like they say that of the three like original single player maps I did, they preferred the second one. But I don't know, I kind of like the first one. I guess it was where I the first map where I kind of proved out a few ideas that were actually fun. Like I don't know if you remember the lift, where you go up the lift and then an enemy appears on another lift directly opposite you as you're going up. I thought that was really cool.
I was going to say that was really cool. That was a cool
moment.
Some
people seem to really enjoy that as well. So I was quite happy with that. But people seem to really enjoy Arabian Nights more. I don't know why. I guess. I don't know.
Different strokes.
I'm clicking download on all of these right now, but I won't play them during the show. I'll wait.
You can hear him drooling, though. He's ready. Yeah.
I think I had a lot of help from my mate Chris, Chris Dransord, aka Drans. This is a funny story. Our first ever.
I don't believe he exists.
Don't you start that shit, man. Here we go.
I was gonna say you have an alter ego, correct? And it's Dransord.
Yeah. I figured this might come up.
Oh, sorry.
I figured it might
continue.
So no, he's a real living, breathing person. So we were friends in school, both got into Quake about the same time. He was really into his multiplayer maps. I was really into my single player maps. So I said, let's make a site together and we can release maps really often and be the best Quake mappers in the whole universe. And he was like, yeah, all right. So we made a site called the Daz Drans Level Cave, one of the best website names you will ever find on the internet. he released a load of really, really cool deathmatch maps. He really had a feel for deathmatch, whereas me, I think I released something like 14 or 15 deathmatch maps back in the day, but they were all shockingly bad. And I do not recommend you play any of them. They're just more like brush doodles. I was like, okay, I suppose we better put a layout in this as well, but it was just kind of fun stuff to build. But
let's read some of these. These names are blood, sweat, and piss.
Yeah, that's a classic. That one.
And I love that you have a good link here, a hyperlink that goes to additional information and download. Teardrop, purple haze, fall of the acrid core.
Yeah.
Mechanical tears, under the influence, black coffee. I see a theme, but I won't comment on it. It's a liquid theme.
Chris was really into naming his maps after albums and song titles that he really liked. Whereas I was trying to be the edgy one. And varying levels of failure on that one.
I think you're being a little. Some of these look really amazing, though. In my opinion, I don't think they look.
Like, good. I had fun making them. I think they all look okay. It was just the gameplay didn't really hold up in most of them, I think.
And you would know.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say multiplayer is my focus. No. Really, it's.
Well, Arcee will take it from here, but I do want to ask you about how you got how you became a critic. At some point you didn't segue, but you just added that to
your
bag of tricks, becoming
kind of
a map
around
critic.
About the same time I was doing all these multiplayer maps and doing all my original single player stuff. Me and Chris were doing the Planet Quake level of the week. I can't remember when this was. I think we did it for maybe a year, maybe two. I forget. Shambler was doing it for single player. And then I think he stopped doing it when he stopped doing his Team Shambler Quake level review site. So me and Chris took over. I think I'm getting the timeline right. So I would do single player maps. Chris would do multiplayer maps. And that was kind of my first review site, I guess. And then me and Chris did a site called Religion Quake, where we just reviewed multiplayer maps, single player maps, whatever. That was like a spin-off of our Level Cave site. And we did that for maybe a year or two as well. I kind of really enjoyed it. I just enjoyed like finding something cool and then promoting it to people that maybe haven't seen it. So I found that quite enjoyable. And then I did the same thing for Aliens versus Predator 2, of all things, because I really enjoyed the game, and they released their tool set with it. There wasn't really anyone.
Yeah, because you have a whole website dedicated to.
I had a Planet AVP site called The Derelict that was basically, just a review site, and like people would send me like promotional stuff for their mods and maps, and I'd put all that stuff up there. And it seemed to be received quite well by the community. I did some like interviews and stuff like that. I don't know if the site's still online. I think I uploaded a backup somewhere after.
I'm looking at it right now. In fact, I'm looking at the must-have features of your levels.
Oh god, yeah.
Just like in order to be reviewed on this site, you must have all of the following: be fully compiled. It must have a file.
That's a good
name.
One.
Must be in a file named res file.
There are a few.
You're very strict.
Well, was because the mod support kind of came just after the game released, and if you didn't package your files correctly, it wouldn't show up in the launcher for the game, and then you had to go through all kinds of hoops to load it. And I was like, you know what, just deal with that stuff so people can just load it from the launcher and fine. I was thinking of the end users, I guess.
You remind me of Spirit in that regard. This has to be a certain way, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it was a real hassle
to get on Quantic, which is fine.
So yeah.
No, and there's a good reason for the reason Spirit does it as well for the Quake.
Yeah, engine. Yeah, for sure.
But RC, I think you had a question.
Well, just kind of branching off what we were talking about with Daz and your friend went by Drans, right?
Yep.
Chris. Okay. So you and Drans reviewing maps and everything together. Did he work on the AVP stuff with you as well?
Oh, no. I mean, none of us worked on any AVP2 maps.
Did he work on the review stuff with you as well there?
No. He was definitely always into Quake. I think he diverged a little into Quake 2, but then he kind of had his fill and moved on.
Okay. So do you keep in contact with Chris this, today, or have you guys kind of lost touch?
Yeah. No, we're still friends. We still chat, but I haven't seen him in person for quite a while now. He's busy. He's got married and he's just had a kid. So he's pretty much busy all the time now.
Does he still partake in the Quake?
I don't think so. No, he might have a look around the community every now and then, but I haven't seen him post for years now. So who knows?
It'd be amazing if he just stormed back one day. It was just like, boom, here's a whole episode.
Yeah, that would be pretty mind-blowing. That would be a nice surprise.
So moving on from reviewing and doing maps for AVP and Quake, you've also done maps for a bunch of other games, though, too, like Half-Life 2. Is that correct?
Yeah. I always wanted to make a map for Half-Life 2 ever since it was released, but there was a lot of stuff to learn in the editor. I mean, it was Hammer, so there's an element of familiarity there, but there's always new stuff, displacements, models, the entire new input-output system that I had to learn. So I put it off for quite a while, and I don't know what got me into it. I think it was a competition on Planet Philip, and I thought, okay, a time limit, this is the perfect thing to actually get me to make a map. I guess it's a similar thing with Quake as well. Like, the only thing I've released recently are stuff that's been for time-limited competitions. It actually forces me to finish stuff, so it was the same kind of thing here. And the theme just really, really resonated with me. So, I jumped in and did a map for Ambushville, which won the competition, which I was pretty shocked about, but it seemed people really liked it.
Nice. Yeah, that's pretty amazing to just come out of nowhere and, like, here's a Half-Life 2 map. Oh, and I won. Okay.
Yeah, it's very surprising.
And also Ravenholmville, which I think Rob Martens was involved with, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, did I notice his name?
Yeah, yeah. He's done a load of Half-Life 2 stuff as well as Quake stuff.
Which I did not know until I saw his name on there. Like, I did download that last night, and then I realized, oh crap, I don't have Half-Life installed right now. Damn it. Because I really wanted to play both of these. I love Half-Life 2, but I haven't touched it in years, but I do love that game.
Yeah, yeah. Really sad news recently that Planet Philip has stepped away. I keep calling him Planet Philip. His name's Philip. But he's stepped away from the website. That guy was like, I don't know, I guess like the spirit of the Half-Life 2 community, to use a Quake comparison.
Yeah.
So he's stepped down. He's got a guy called Don stepping in for him, who's another Half-Life stalwart. So I think the site will be fine. But yeah, it's always pretty shocking when someone steps down who's been there for like 20 years or something.
I got a quick question about the Half-Life 2 kind of output and everything. And this might be a stupid, I know there's a ton of mods for Source and Half-Life 2 and all that over the years, but is it like Doom where there's just a vast amount of map content out there, or is it a little more closer to the Quake thing because of the kind of the learning?
Yeah,
you know, it's the curve that you need.
It's hard to say. Like, it goes through like peaks and valleys. Like, whenever Planet Philip ran a competition, there'd be a slew of new map releases for that competition and a few afterwards as well. Like, people that missed the deadline or they wanted to do something bigger. So it was all kind of run on the whim of Planet Philip almost. So, like, yeah, I think the community it's fairly small now, but there's definitely like a kind of slow cadence of releases that seems to peak every now and then when someone organizes a competition or, you know, something like that. But generally, I think it's more like the Quake community where, you know, people work on this stuff forever and make it perfect, which slows down releases.
I mean, I've never dove in because it's just, I can imagine how long it would take to make something of worth, you know, for this game. It's just, I mean, compared to Quake or other games, just, wow, you could do so much. It's powerful, but I'm kind of looking through the site. It's really fantastic. So, but you did reviews, quite a few level reviews. I've seen at least a half dozen myself. I know you've done more than that, but on Custom Gamer for that. So, one thing I did want to ask you is, how did you develop? You're really good at reviews, and you have a really great eye. And I've learned so much from watching your videos on Quake, of course, but, you know, how did you develop this? Did you read books? Is it just kind of come natural to you? How did you
That's a good question. I guess just practice makes perfect. Like, if you go back and have a look at some of the first ever videos I did with commentary, they're really bad. They're really bad. And it's just
relate.
A case of, okay. And you can hear me. I'm absolutely terrified in the first few videos I did. Like, I was absolutely terrified of putting myself out on the internet and talking about stuff. So it's a case of getting over that and then actually thinking about what stood out to you in the map. So I generally like play through the map a few times, maybe on different skill levels or trying to play it differently each time, trying to find all the secrets. And then just writing down a list of stuff that I liked and stuff that I didn't like and, like, things the author's trying to do with the map. Then I'd just have that in front of me when I did the the audio commentary for it.
You make it sound so seamless and everything, but I guess there's a lot more work to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I mean, I tried at first doing it as like recording the audio commentary while I was playing the map, and that's a terrible idea. If you want advice, never do that. because it's so hard to play and be kind of coherent at the same time. It's something I'm terrible at, so I had to do all my commentary in post and just edit it. Even in post, I would like edit it and chop bits out and move stuff around just to make myself sound a little bit less crazy.
You know, I'm an editor by trade, and I haven't heard too many edits. So you did a great job on that. I'm even more impressed. I know how much work goes into these, and I know RC does too.
Yeah.
If you're cutting, it just adds so much time to the process. I know why people stream, but also I don't like watching streaming that much. Mm. I mean, I do. I watch plenty, but because you have all these, you know, fits and starts and. And then if you come in halfway, you don't know what the hell is going on.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, all this
editing.
You guys
are killing me here.
No.
It's a skill. Hey, RC, if you can do it, then that's great, man. I couldn't.
Yeah, it's not impossible. It's just something I can't do. And I know, but I also know how much time it takes to edit. So you're putting out way more content than I am, RC. And so I get the move to streaming. I totally get it because you have a lot of requests too. Mm-hmm.
A lot of the editing was just like removing all the ums and ahs and ers and stuff like that. I should release a remix one day of just every single and er I've removed from my audio tracks. It'd be about 4 hours long.
If you saw my outtakes on camera, you guys would be like, "Who is put them in a padded room?"
Yeah,
I'm even weirder. I'm even weirder off camera than I am on camera. So.
I totally empathize. Yeah.
You should put together an outtake. That'd be great.
Oh man, yeah, Daz, I'd like to see your outtakes.
Maybe one day I'll do a highlight reel.
So now, out of all those videos, I mean, good God, I was trying to get a count for the videos and I just stopped counting. But you have Spelunky in there. You've got a ton of Quake, ton of Half-Life in there. So what were the ones that you feel like you hit your stride and kind of really had, you know, a really significant, you know, like you felt good? Because I know I feel good about some of my tutorials and the other ones. I'm like, oh, I'm going to make a new one. So everybody forgets about that one. So where did you feel like you were really kind of making strides and getting good feedback?
Oh man. I'm really not sure, to be honest. I'd have to go back and look at some of my older videos. It was just a case of continual improvement. I think like every time I put out a video, people in the comments, and I've got to say this, like most YouTube comments are like a quagmire of bullshit.
But yep.
I guess one of the nice things about having a small channel like mine is that only kind of people that were interested in the topic kind of posted. So my comments were never really that bad. And it was always people giving feedback and like, okay, I didn't agree with you here and this is why, and you could have done this better. So it was just a case of reading the comments, which sounds crazy when you talk about YouTube, but it was kind of all right.
Yeah. I've had pretty good experiences with mine, but mine are so specific, you know, to tutorials and things like that. So, and I get a lot of questions and I do try to answer all of them in some way, you know. Sometimes my fallback is like, just go to the Discord. But if I can answer it, I usually kind of grab my phone and like, I don't have Twitter on my phone or a lot of social media on my phone, but I do keep the YouTube studio on my phone so I can just answer as soon as possible. So, but you cultivated a great audience. And I know, we had a question like, when are you doing another video? Or, you know, I have a feeling I know the answer, but I mean, you accomplished a lot. So I think if you didn't do another video, we still have all this great archive of great work that you've done.
Yeah. Yeah. And like the main reason I started the channel was kind of, we touched on it earlier, was kind of put Quake and to a lesser degree Half-Life, but it was kind of all lumped into the same thing, just showing the wider world what these crazy people mapping for this old ass game are making and how good it is. And I think it did some good there. Like, there's a few people that have messaged me and said, okay, I saw your channel and Quake Mapping looks really cool, and there's this new editor called Trench Broom and I'm going to give it a try. And then like, you know, a month or two later, I'd see them posting their map on Funk Message Board or on Discord or something. So I was like, okay.
Yeah, actually, I was one of those people, good. And I'm sure I messaged you. I saw your Trench Broom video and I remember going, oh, I got to get this now. So good job.
Yeah. That video was, I had no idea how popular it would be. It did really well on the channel. So kind of wish I'd spent some more time on it now. I kind of threw it together in an evening and uploaded it.
Yeah. That's what always happens, though. It's always those videos you're like, this is like 5 minutes long. I took probably as long to make it. And then for some odd reason, you're like, wow, this was really popular. How do I harness that again?
Yeah, right.
But Daz, I had a question for you on the custom gamer stuff. And I'll sort of echo what Dump Truck was saying. Even on my channel, I hear it constantly. Like, I'll have comments in my channel or whatever where they'll be like, RC, you know, you're all right, but we really wish Custom Gamer would come back. and I'm like, I know, me too. But
yeah, I get alerts on my phone regularly, like, oh, someone's commented on a video, and I'll look at it. It's like, when are you going to make another one? All it ever is now.
And the funny thing is that these people asking for more are people who have probably gone back and rewatched episodes they've already watched because they like it so much. Which is interesting because I talked with somebody on Discord who was talking about that. Like, last year I actually took probably about a month off from Quake or whatever, and somebody messaged me on Discord and they were like, I could only rewatch some of these other episodes so many times before you make a new one. And I'm just like, geez, I didn't know that was a part of this. But I digress. My question for you was going to be about how you actually put the videos together. Like, how many times are you playing through these Quake levels to get the perfect run and everything? Were there any that were specifically a huge pain in the ass to do that with?
Or? Yeah. So some of the longer maps, because I always try and record it as a single demo with no cuts. And for maps that take like an hour to play, that, like, if you die at the last arena or something and you're like, well, I definitely skipped that in a few videos. Like, I died here, so I'm just going to show you this bit in a different demo. So, but yeah, it was especially in maps where there's a lot of stuff going on and you want to show it in a way that the viewer understands it. It can be quite tricky, like walking into a room a certain way to pick out a certain architectural detail, or trying to show what the author was doing with the combat by, you know, entering the room a certain way or triggering something a certain way that shows it off best. So there's lots of takes going on there. And even just like recording the little fly-through videos at the start is a bit of a chore. That was very, very hacked together at the start. I use a gamepad now because luckily Quake Spasm supports gamepads, so you can get those smooth pans really easily now. But back in the day,
I was going to ask about that.
Damn, dude.
That's cool. Yeah.
You are the master. I had no idea. I mean, I knew about the gamepad support, but I didn't even think to try that. Yeah, I just record kind of shots. Yeah, because you really have this great long take, you know, kind of Martin Scorsese kind of long takes, or Alfonso Cuarón kind of long takes, and or Iñárritu, sorry.
That was really hacked together in the start. So I'd set up a whole bunch of keybinds that would like set my speed to be slower, set my turn speed to be slower, set the mouse smoothing way up so that it wouldn't jerk around everywhere when you moved it, and like fly around the map, and then I'd use a third party tool which add in like the banking when you turned, so it felt like you were like in a helicopter or an airplane or something.
Yeah, Dem Smooth. I totally stole that from you.
Yeah, I want to credit the author, but for the life of me, I can't remember who it is. It might have been Mandel. I think it was a speedrunner turned programmer.
I think you're right, and sure. I might have the repo on here, but yeah, I think that's right actually.
Yeah, because I can't remember. I think I was talking about it on Funk Message Board, and he emailed me saying, like, I might be able to help you out with a tool. I was like, yes.
Oh, yeah.
And those do truly come out excellent. I actually, before we started this, I was watching the little video you put together for Grendel's Blade, Sox Map from last year. And that just came together so nice just to show off all the great environmental details and you know, hallways and monsters and stuff like that. It definitely paints the atmosphere for the level. And I could tell from the comments, everyone was like super excited because they're like, oh, I got to play this now, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That was a double-edged sword because the plan behind that was to do a series that wouldn't take me as long to make, but still kind of promote the map and get people to look at it and show off the kind of atmosphere and everything like that. Didn't really work out that way. And most of the comments were, this is cool, but when are you going to make a real video?
So I was like, you know, I gotta say, I think you should try to do like one, you know, keep it to 5 minutes, just do 1 5-minute video a year just to stave off those people.
Yeah.
I know your time is probably way limited now with your day job. So tell us about your day job at Splash Damage.
Okay.
You have a day job that many people in the Quake scene, at least in the Quake scene that I, you know, would kill for. So tell us a little bit about Splash Damage.
Sure, sure. So I started there early March this year. No, last year. Wow, it's not 2018 anymore, is it? Wow.
It's not.
Yeah, so I started there in March 2018. Wow, where to start? I mean,
so had you been?
It's been a roller coaster.
I know you were level. It's been a roller coaster. You were a level designer on a different game before, which we'll get to. But You had kind of a big, you know, distance between those gigs. So had you always been wanting to get back into it professionally, or was this something that came up and you jumped at it?
Yeah. So when I finished at Eurocom, I didn't want to go back into games for quite a while, for reasons we can talk about later, I guess. But and then I was doing all these other jobs, and it was like, worked retail for a while, did this and that, kind of all over the place. Nothing particularly fantastic, and like game dev was always there in the back of my mind. Like, why aren't you doing this? You know, you're good at it. Go back and do that. So, and then I started doing, like with the Half-Life 2 stuff, with my Left 4 Dead map, with my map pack for XCOM 2. I was kind of testing the waters to see if I still had it in me, and then it worked out. Yeah, I got an email.
So was this a situation for you where they contacted you because they saw your body of work, or was this more like you applied and then they called you afterwards?
Yeah, so I applied way before I got hired. I applied like a year before I heard anything. I applied to a whole bunch of companies and didn't hear anything back. And then I want to say like a month or two before I got an interview at Splash, I was chatting in Discord with Sean Noonan, who works there. And he said, we're hiring at the moment. And I said, oh, really? I put in a CV there. And he said, oh, I'll put in a good word for you. And then, yeah, about a month later, I got an email.
Oh, that's brilliant.
That is the way to get a job anywhere, is having just the right, because not that you don't deserve the job, it's just there's so many applicants, it's so tough to get your foot in the door.
Anyone that ever asks me, because a lot of people have asked me, like, you know, how'd you get in again, and what's the secret sauce? And the answer is, you've got to work hard, you've got to be lucky, and you've got to make connections in the industry. Those are the three biggest things I can think of. Like luck, i.e. there's a position open somewhere that you can apply for. Connections always help. If someone at the company knows who you are, then they can put in a good word for you. And hard work, i.e. you have a portfolio of stuff that you can show that's high quality. So luckily I had all those things and it worked out.
That's awesome. That's so cool. And at Splash Damage, you're working on a very, we'll say at the moment, it's been announced, but very secret game that not many people know much about, which is Gears Tactics.
Yeah.
So,
it sounds dangerous. I'm even saying the name.
You're like, no, don't say it. Oh, wait, right. E3 last year, we announced it. That's right.
Yeah. So, of course, I've been working on Gears Tactics since March last year. With Sean and a whole bunch of other cool people. It's a really, really talented team. We're making some really cool stuff. None of it of which I can talk about yet, so you just have to trust me.
Fair enough. Yep. I trust you. As soon as I saw it, I was like, oh my God, this concept is brilliant. Like, because Gears has been one thing for so long, and the fact that they're finally taking it, or you guys are taking it and putting it into a completely different genre, I think is a brilliant idea.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny because the last thing I made before I got interviewed was this map pack for XCOM 2, which is another kind of turn-based tactics game, right? So imagine my surprise when I go to Splash Damage, who I just assumed would be making multiplayer games, right? And then they said, "Oh no, we're doing a tactics game." And my mind just kind of exploded in front of people in the scene. I couldn't believe it.
That's so cool. And so, you're located right in London there?
Yeah, Bromley. So kind of just on the south boundary of Greater London. Depending on who you ask, it's kind of an argument whether it's actually in London or not. Geographically, yes.
That's funny. It's
far enough away that it's not too crazy. So
that's cool.
Yeah,
I mean, definitely. I grew up in the country, so big cities don't really gel with me that much. So Bromley's all right, though.
So, Daz, before you ever came to Splash Damage, though, to work on the new Gears game, you did work on a game that I actually like quite a bit that came out, what was it, 15, 16 years ago, somewhere around that range?
Yeah, something like that.
Sphinx and the Cursed Mummy. Now, in this game, it's sort of a Zelda-style game. It's an action-adventure game where you play as the Sphinx and a Cursed Mummy. And you sort of have two sides to the coin where you have the Zelda side of it where you play as a Sphinx and you go through different dungeon type areas to progress. And on the Cursed Mummy side, you have this sort of like puzzle solving dungeon thing that you're doing. Both halves make the complete game. And I thought that back in the day that was actually a pretty brilliant idea. But come to find out, you actually worked on this game in a certain capacity. So how did you get involved with Sphinx?
Sure. Well, this is another weird situation where I was just making like Quake stuff in my spare time and, you know, doing all that thing. This was around about 2001, I think, 2002, something around that time. And I just got an email out of the blue from Eurocom saying, we're looking for level designers. Do you want to come up for an interview? And of course, this is like, you know, the big break moment, right? So I almost fell off my chair. So I went up there for an interview. I can't remember when it was, but saw the company, had an interview. They just asked me some stuff about my level design work and if I'd done any like regular design as well. I hadn't, but so I kind of felt the interview went okay, but I really wasn't sure. And then about 3 weeks later, they said, "Yeah, we want to hire you. So come on up. We'll find you a place to live and yeah, you can come and make video games for us." So
cool.
I was quite happy. And it was an interesting time. It was completely mind-blowing. I learned so much up there. But it was extremely difficult because they'd hired me and I'd figured I'd be doing level design. And like, I want to say maybe 30% of the work I was doing was level design. In the case of like placing monsters in the maps, but I didn't actually do any layouts or any kind of heavy-handed scripting or anything. So it was just kind of placing enemies, getting a feel for like balance and stuff like that. The majority of the work I was doing was actually building the enemies and their attacks, like from like a numbers and like balancing perspective, which is something completely outside of my wheelhouse, right? I'd never done anything like that before, so it was a case of flying before you'd learnt to walk. And right. it was very, very stressful. It's something I'd never done before. So, it got pretty tricky. And then at the end of the project, there was a decent amount of crunch to get the game done, which we managed, but it pretty much killed me. And the other thing was, it was like the first time that I'd moved away from home. So like all my friends were down south, all my family was down south. So I was kind of up there by myself. That didn't work out too well either. So I ended up getting very, very homesick by the end of the first year. So all these things combined kind of ended my career there, I guess. It was a pretty unceremonious exit, unfortunately. It didn't go too well. Yeah.
So did you, you ended up leaving of your own volition at the time?
No, they kicked me out. Okay. Basically, my attendance started becoming really, really bad.
Gotcha.
Yeah, they gave me the boot after a while, which was totally within their right because, yeah, things weren't going so great.
You were pretty young, though. I mean, part of that is just learning. It's a learning experience because, I mean, I've had plenty of crunch in my career, but I can't imagine what it's like in the game industry because I know it's just a meat grinder.
Right.
Because ours is cyclical, and I know what time of year, you know, when we know the deadline when this crunch is going to happen. There's a couple different times of the year, usually in the spring. But for you guys, it's like, well, hit one deadline, then, you know, one milestone, then another, and then another, and then another. No, there's a delay. And so it just keeps going on and crushing. So.
Yeah, for sure. Luckily, something I can say about Splash is that they're very, very good at minimizing that stuff. They have a lot of really good policies for kind of the health of their employees. So that was something I was very, very happy to hear when I started there, and it's been true. So, yeah, that's really good.
Yeah. No, I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad you sort of have come back to us here, you know, 2018, making games again, and you're in sort of a healthier frame of mind and a healthier job atmosphere. So that's great to hear. I know that the past couple of years has been coming to light a lot about companies and, you know, crunch culture, I guess, as they call it. Because these games are trying to go gold so badly without, you know, so many bugs and whatever else that they're just asking people to stay these like ungodly amount of hours. And I imagine back then there were no real, you know, laws or anything against that kind of thing. But I don't know because I wasn't in the industry at the time.
Yeah. It's difficult because you've worked. I mean, I was there a year. There were people that have been obviously working on the game since I think it was like 3-year development cycle. So there are people there much longer than me. They were much, much more invested in it succeeding. And, you know, when you've worked on something for that long, you want to make it the best it can be. And being young, you don't really realize the damage it's doing to you at the time. It all comes out at once, and you suddenly realize how tired and exhausted you are. Right. So yeah, it's pretty rough.
And I think that's a good lesson for everybody. Kiddies out there listening, remember work to life ratio, very important to keep that balanced because I've definitely had some crunch times in my job too. And it was not good.
Yeah. I think the industry is very, very slowly changing for the better. Like there's a lot of talk now of like unionization and more laws to combat this kind of stuff, and I think it's difficult because at the end of the day it all comes down to money. Like if you can't crunch your workers and you run out of money, then you know you're dead, aren't you? So it's a really hard problem to solve. It's not just about man hours. It's about money and scheduling and production and all this stuff as well. So it's a hard problem to fix.
And I have to say, it's not just the game industry or even the entertainment industry. I mean, it's really pervasive everywhere to different degrees, and it's just the concentration of corporate power and the lack of action, you know, on governments, you know, either local or nations where you're just getting squeezed and squeezed and squeezed and squeezed. I mean, it's kind of sad, but, and then you have all these shareholders that just want growth and it's just it's not going to get better. It's not going to get better, but
yeah,
I don't know. It's tough on people.
Yeah. It's one of those things. I guess that's, If I had to give a word of warning for anyone that wants to get into games, it would be expect crunch, but just look after yourself. Like it's part of the industry. I wish it wasn't. Just look after yourselves and try and find a company that looks after its employees. Good luck with that. But
sounds like you landed in a good place though. And they've been around for a long, long time with a lot of titles under their belts. I mean, they're doing something right.
Yeah, I feel extremely fortunate to land where I did. Not to say there isn't any crunch. I mean, of course, we're a video game company, so of course we sometimes have to work extra, but they look after us.
Why don't we circle back to Quake a little bit? Because Yeah, I know that you dip toe in. You definitely, I know you're busy with your job and everything, but you dip your toe in, you'll kind of make it, we'll see, you know, Daz sightings here and there on Terra Fusion Discord. But, you know, what are some of the things you're noticing in the community now? Because I'm just seeing there's a lot of activity. There's a lot of, you know, especially on the Discord and with mapping and everything. And we've got Trench Room 2.1 out and everything. What are some of the things that have kind of jumped out at you as far as maps or, you know, maybe mappers or, you know, mods or what have you, when you dip your toe in and kind of see what's going on, even if it's about community stuff?
I guess the big one for me is Arcane Dimensions. Like, just by itself, it's an amazing achievement. Like, Sock is a nutcase and I love him. Him and his team, him and the AD team have done amazing work on that thing, and I hope they're all incredibly proud of what they've done. But it's also served as a platform to bring a shit ton of new people into the scene. Like, it's like AD was on like mainstream news sites. Like, I know Rock Paper Shotgun puts a lot of articles up about old games doing new stuff, and Arcane Dimensions has been on there a few times, and I think PC Gamer as well ran a story on Arcane Dimensions when it first came out.
Yep.
So it's been a brilliant platform for new blood for the grinder.
and then
with that, like, the new editor as well, like Trench Broom, has brought in just a ton of new people into the scene. So I guess just like fresh blood, you know, is always good. New ideas, pushing out some of the old established ideas that perhaps weren't that great. I remember back in the day, like, if you did colored lighting for your map back in the day, we're talking like 2000 to like 2004 or something like that, you put colored lighting in a quake map back then, you'd be laughed out of, you know, Funk Metaphor. Quake doesn't need colored lighting. What is this crap? I'm like, you put fog in your map? It's like, oof, what have you done? Quake doesn't need fog. Whereas now it's like, I love that stuff now. It's so helpful for like atmosphere and tone and all this stuff. So it's been great. Like, pushing out all these old ideas and bringing in new blood is fantastic.
Yeah, that's awesome. Did you notice that Than had come back and finished an old map that he started, and it's like already people are talking like map of the year kind of stuff. Did you catch that?
I don't know if I've played it. I didn't even know he released one. Is this a new thing? I must have missed it.
Yeah, it's fairly recent. Let me grab the actual title, because now, of course, now that I brought it up, I completely spaced on what it was called. But he took a remix.
Yeah, I have to admit, I haven't played. Okay, a remix, huh? Cool.
Yeah, it was something that he had started years ago. And here we go. Let's see. Where is it? I'm so sorry. Is it Dark Portal? Yeah, DM6 remix. And this came out back in October. Early October, and he said, managed to finish an old map, half-finished map I had sitting on my computer collecting virtual dust after I got inspired by a healthy and active the community still is. After all these years, I've fallen in love with the new tools. So hopefully there will be more maps after this. So it's based on the Dark Zone, and it's really cool. It's definitely worth playing. It's pretty spectacular. It took me two settings
to finish it. Check that out.
And I think, RC, you streamed it, right?
I definitely played through it, though. Yeah, the Dark Portal level was very, very good. It's, believe it or not, the first of Than's maps that I played. And I plan to do I did this last year to CZG showcase episode. So I'm going to do one for Than as well, because a lot of people talk about how much they like his maps.
Yeah. He pushes out so many classics. I remember when APSP2 came out back in the day. What was it called? Something Base. I forget. But that blew me away back in the day.
Yeah, and that it still holds up too. I played that not too long ago. I just did five must play maps, you know, in no particular order, and that it still holds up. It's so much fun.
Yeah. So Dump Truck, I think we have a few community questions to ask.
Oh, do we now?
I think we do.
Hold on, let me hit the thingy.
The first question, Daz, I've gotten from a few people as soon as I posed the question. Hey, what would you like to ask Daz? When are you getting back into doing Quake streaming?
Well, I mean, funnily enough, I went back to visit my folks at Christmas, and I brought back everything I need to stream with me, my webcam, my microphone, all this stuff. So the only really excuse I have now is laziness. But never say never. I know people always ask me like when I'm going to do like more vids or streams and stuff like that. So I really did need a break from it because I felt like I was starting to repeat myself a lot and it was really getting on my nerves. So I needed a break, but never say never. I'll probably end up doing something at some point. But no promises.
So that's the hard part about it, though, right? Is, you know, I've done, what am I up to? I'm almost up to 260 episodes of The Quake Rave at this point. And I do one a week most of the time. And you do run out of things to talk about in the level. Like, it's always refreshing to get, and Dump Truck and I have talked about this a few times, but it's been refreshing to get a lot of new mappers because a lot of them will look at things a little bit differently and they'll create something that, even if architecturally it looks kind of weird, you're like, wow, this is something new. It's something different. Once you played so many Quake maps, at some point you're kind of like, you know, oh, this fight is the same as the fight in these, you know, 50 other maps, you know, and it kind of gets to a point where it's like, what do I say about this? You know?
Yeah, for sure.
So that, I can definitely kind of relate to that.
Yeah, that's definitely where I was. Cause I was always trying to think of what's this level do that I haven't talked about before. And that was getting harder and harder, but you bring up a good point. There's a lot of maps that I've played recently, which are quite out there and they would probably make interesting videos. So, you know, maybe we'll see.
I know there's some good ones in the recent Xmas jam. So if you do come back, there's a couple in there that you might want to check
out. I've been playing through that. There's some cool stuff in it. Yeah.
Halloween Jam had some crazy stuff too, but I'm sorry. I don't see any other questions, RC.
I thought we had one more.
Community questions. I know your new favorite song is Too Hot to Handle, Too Big to Miss. let's see.
I was crying.
Oh, was that funny?
At the end of the last episode.
It was funny because we started recording earlier and Dump Truck was like, if you ever do that again, and I'm like, oh,
that is not true.
I'm kidding.
I love being the butt of a joke. That's for sure. So just keep going. Keep at it, RC. Nothing bad will happen to you.
I think actually the other community thing was the Dan's Drans thing. I think that's what I was thinking of.
Oh yeah, and by the way, Sleepwalker put us up to that, so you can blame him.
Yeah, I heard his comment about that. I'm gonna have to have words with that guy. I mean,
exactly. No soup for you.
I think it's hilarious that it's carried on all these years. But yeah, no, unfortunately we are two different people. I'm going to have to burst the bubble here.
Well, I'm not going to believe until we have Chris on the show and have a confirmation of this, but yeah, all right. Let's put it this way. I don't think many people on Funk are going to believe it until they hear it, but maybe we'll have him on his side of the
story. Right. I'll just get Dan in a wig and he's like, I'm Chris.
Yeah.
I'm really Chris. I promise. We're sitting here in the same room.
Yes, I have. Never mind. Sorry.
It's never going to be enough proof. So I think we'll just let it run.
It's the internet. There's never enough proof.
Oh, well, actually, I have one other question. You did an April Fool's joke last year. Will we have a sequel to that at some point?
I don't mind.
It's possible.
If people want to ask me to do stuff, then they can ask. Like, I'm quite happy to help out every now and then.
For people who don't know, he was he made a guest appearance on RC's show, and it was pretty funny. It was good. It was good stuff.
Yeah, that was fun.
It's really out there. I just wanted to do something completely bonkers. So
mission accomplished.
Afterwards, and the people seem to appreciate it, so that's cool.
Yeah, it was nice that people recognize you too. They immediately heard the voice, and a few people were like, "Hey, it's a it's a guy from Custom Gamer." So I thought that was great.
Yeah, that was fun.
But Daz, it was great talking to you today, man. we definitely wish you luck with, you know, everything you're doing with Gears and at Splash Damage in the future. We always extend out an invitation to come back. So when you can talk more about it, we would love to have you back, maybe to talk about what you're actually doing on it and, you know, everything else that's related.
Yeah. It'd be cool to come back when the game's out or when we've released some more info on it so I can talk a bit more about it maybe then. But yeah, that'd be fun.
This is RC. Thanks for listening to the Quakecast. You can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/watchGGRC.
And I'm Dump Truck. You can find me on YouTube. Just search for DumpTruck_DS.
Yeah.
I know your time is probably way limited now. With your day job.
Yeah. Yeah.
And definitely. That was the clumsiest segue I've ever attempted in my entire life.
Oh, it was good. It was perfect. I'm digging it.
We're keeping that in the show too, just so you know.
I appreciate that.